Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. It's Thursday. It's not Thursday. It's usually Thursday.
Okay. So close. So right. Close.
Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. It's Wednesday, March 17th, 2010. This is episode number 215. I'm your esteemed host, Evan Lottie, PC Gamer's senior editor, and I'm joined by the following podcasteteers: Josh Augustine, PC Gamer associate editor.
Why, hello.
Hey there. Eric Belsas, PC Gamer intern.
Is that kind of like a mouseketeer? Because then I'm totally in.
You can wear a weird hat if you want. You're very inclined to musicals. We're learning this about you over time. It's true. We also have Gary Witta here with us.
Yes, hello.
And, of course, Andy Bauman, podcast producer.
Usually I really look forward to the podcast, but today it's interrupting some serious Bad Company 2 time, and I'm having withdrawals.
That's good. Have you been playing on our server?
Absolutely. Almost, hopefully, at least every other day, if not every night, I could try and get on for just a few matches. So,
if you don't mind sharing, what's your username? I wonder if I've seen you on there.
Oh, it's pretty obvious because I go by PCGP_Andy.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, You would know. And people be like, oh, it's the crazy dude from the podcast.
Excellent. All right, so while there isn't a ton of news this week, because we're post-GDC, and that's when all the big announcements and information and cool interviews came out last week, we are grateful for a pretty generous slate of games that came out on Tuesday and yesterday, including Metro 2033, Command & Conquer 4 Tiberian Twilight, Mountain Blade Warband, and Dragon Age Origins Awakening, the first expansion of Dragon Age. What's our pick out of all of those? What you're going to play?
Dragon Age, for sure. I am very excited about this. To be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about it up until a few days ago. I was just expecting maybe like a 10-hour experience, but the fact that it's going to be like 20-plus hours and take you up into the mid to high like 30s, my character ended at, I think, 19, after the first campaign. So, I mean, that's a ton of content. And the whole idea of, like, I think the guy's like half evil, half good or something.
The architect,
the main kind of villain or hero, depending on how you look at it, where he sees the blight as like something that needs to be stopped, but the best way to do it is to like kill everybody or something. It's really confusing, but I'm excited to see kind of how the complex story kind of works out and the decisions it's going to give you, where it's like, you can do evil for the greater good, or, you know, are you going to stand firm and know nothing evil must be done ever?
I'm still really surprised that they went with introducing, I think it's like 5 new party members.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Instead of bringing over their existing ones. I mean, you have to think about, they have to create entirely new assets, skill trees, animations, voice actors. But yeah, hopefully they are deserving of that roster of excellent Dragon Age party members.
Well, Josh, do you know some of the ins and outs? Have they sort of extended some of the talent trees, some of the spell trees longer? Or do you have to just, like, if you keep leveling up, you have to keep going down new talent trees?
I'm not entirely sure on it, to be honest. I actually thought I lost all my Dragon Age save games, so I started replaying it last night, and I found them on a backup hard drive. So I haven't had a chance to boot it up yet.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I like the idea of specializing even more in, say, like, my Ice Mage, kind of, quote-unquote, but I'm like maxed out, you know, and now I have to like do fire, which seems incongruent to my playstyle.
The way I understand it, there will be both some expanded like spell trees and talent trees, along with additional new skills and talents. And what do they call the kind of specialties for your characters?
I'm not sure. Traits? I'm not sure.
No, there's like four per class, and they're adding two more, I guess.
The ones...
Oh, okay.
Oh, the ones where you have to like unlock them, and then you can spec?
Yeah.
Yeah, like arc...
Yeah, specialties or whatever.
Arcane Warrior was one of them for me.
Yeah, two more of those. So.
Cool.
Okay. So Metro 2033, I mean, that's probably the one I'm going to attack first. I actually have reviewed it for another publication already, but I'm looking forward to playing it on PC because, Eric, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. I mean, we really see this as the new visual benchmark for gaming, like the new Crysis in some ways. I mean, I don't want to throw that kind of hyperbole out there, but it's a really demanding and beautiful game. The lighting tech, not so much physics in the same way Crysis or other games operate, but just the raw lighting tech and the quality of the textures is off the charts.
It's so incredibly engrossing how it puts you in the environments it does, and it's unforgiving. I mean, it doesn't light up places just because there's a bad guy there or something. It takes sort of its own brand of realism to the max.
Yeah, I had somebody message me on Steam yesterday that was sort of deciding whether or not they wanted to buy it. They were sort of on the, you know, hovering over the button, so to speak, and and they're asking, you know, is it a scary game? Is it a linear game? Is it like BioShock? And I mean, there were a lot of comparisons made to BioShock about it because it's, you know, you're in an insulated underground setting. It's single player. It's very immersive and whatnot. But it's pretty distinct from BioShock from what I played. I was never really reminded of the way BioShock operated. I mean, the way the chapters progress, it's very linear. It's almost like, was the phrase I use? I sort of describe it as like each chapter is like its own airlock. Like you can't backtrack at all. You can't really go back to other stations. And I think that was sort of the perception in that you're in this big underground world of, you know, connected subways, and you could just move between them and get items and trade and things like that. But it doesn't work that way at all. It's very much a novel in how it progresses linearly. But yeah, it's other than that, it's one of the most grueling games I've ever played, and that's praise actually. It totally commits to eliminating HUD from the game in the way that I mean, there's no life bar, there's no ammo, there's no what else, Eric? I mean, there's no like damage indicator really. It just really strives to be organic throughout. I mean, to the extent that when you're on the surface, it's post-apocalyptic. You're on this you're a survivor, and you're going to the surface to scavenge for items and ammo and things like that. And you have to wear a gas mask because there's lots of radiation and it's poisonous, I guess. But you also have to replace the canister on your gas mask over time. Mm. And there's two ways that you know when to do that. You can check your wristwatch, which you sort of hold up your arm, sort of Far Cry style, and see how close you are to wearing it out. Or you're sort of naturally seeing, you know, is my mask fogging up? Am I breathing more heavily? And that's when you know how to replace it. It kind of adds to the tension in that you don't have, you know, I think you can actually even disable the crosshair. Am I remembering that correctly, Eric, do you think?
Yeah, I'm almost certain of that.
Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a novel-like experience. It's relatively short. It's probably under 10 hours, depending on how you interact with it, but still a really exciting thing. And you can tell the guys at 4A Studios, again, some of the former team members from Stalker, really put their all into it. Is anybody going to play CNC4?
I am.
Yeah, terrific.
Well, I don't know. Is it supposed to be good? I don't know anything about it. I like the franchise.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the conclusion of the Tiberium saga with Cain and you know, arguably one of the most recognizable and distinctive PC gaming villains of all time.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it, that the guy who plays him just never seems to age.
he's a vampire, right? And it's funny, like it fits the fiction even that.
I met him many, many years ago when I went to what at the time was Westwood Studios out in Las Vegas. And I think at the time they were doing Command & Conquer 2, the one that had Michael Biehn in it. And, you know, obviously Joe, who plays Cain, was in that as well, as he has been in all of them. And I was just looking at some pictures on the CNC4 website. They've got an interview with him talking about, you know, his career playing Cain. And he looks the same. It's bizarre. He must live in they must keep him in like a hyperbaric chamber or something between games.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. I mean, I know CNC4 is supposed to be a little bit more serious, or, you know, less campy than the original games, even though it sort of has the same FMV shooting style of cutscenes there. But and I'm glad you mentioned that, Gary, because I noticed the Facebook photos you put up a couple weeks ago of I believe it was like a there was a the Game Gods cover, I guess it's called, right?
Yeah,
you guys had John Carmack and
yeah, 10 years ago we did that.
And just like seeing some of those guys, like John Carmack holding a Coke can, and Bruce Shelley and Robin Walker, just sort of all casually interacting. I mean, that's such amazing behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, and some of those guys have aged pretty well too. But there's just something about Kane. It's like, I don't know, like Tiberium keeps you young or something. did you see that Tiberium got like a little name check in this Lady Gaga video that's out now? This telephone thing.
What?
Yeah.
It's like, just, this like 10-minute epic video with her and Beyonce, and it's like, you know, what people are talking about on the internet right now, because it's like a big, expensive, mega, elaborate, very crazy video. And at some point, there's like a little thing that flashes up on the screen. It's like some kind of analysis of a compound. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's like it's 10% Tiberium. And I remember thinking, wow, someone who worked on that video must play CNC, because I don't think that's a coincidence. But
yeah, it was definitely eye-catching to see that there. I think they also mentioned some sort of compound from Dune. Am I remembering that, Eric? I think you mentioned that.
Bice. Yeah. No, some sort of beta cyanide. I forget the exact terms, but yeah, they've obviously got some sort of nerds on staff for that video.
But it's weird with these games. You know, I like the CNC games, and I've kept up with them over the years. And I remember I knew when Red Alert 3 was coming out, and, you know, I saw it coming down the pipe and got it on Steam when it came out. And this one's really crept up on me. Like, I knew that they were doing it, but it just kind of fell off my radar. And the next thing I know, it's out. I don't know if they didn't do a great job marketing it or something, or if I've just been asleep. But it really seems like this one just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, there may have been a little bit of a lack of effort in marketing, I'm afraid, because we have heard that they have been letting, or they are going to let go some of the team members from the CNC dev team after releases. So unfortunate on that, but we're looking forward to it.
So as someone who's pretty much played all the Red Alert games, but not much of the Command & Conquer, is it similar fast pace? Is it?
Yeah, they're basically the same. It's just it's the same kind of strategy, and, you know, the same dynamics and the same kind of tech trees. It's just a different, slightly different universe, but it generally tends to be the same. If you can play one, you can pretty much play the other.
Yeah, I mean, even though the only like really fundamental change that they made to CNC4 is instead of a base, instead of, you know, base building and whatnot, more along the lines of World in Conflict, and has very little to do with CNC3 and those mechanics. But with the walkers themselves, you know, you have no resource gathering, and you're sort of queuing up units within your walker. And if your walker is deployed, it sort of operates as a factory, and you can let those units out. And even if they die, you just have a unit cap, right? You can build more of them at really no cost other than time. So that's how it works. The multiplayer is 5-on-5, and there's capture point based modes and things like that. So
do they have how many factions are there?
There are two. Nod and GDI, the familiar ones.
Oh, okay. Because it seems that seems kind of old fashioned now. It seems like the three is the minimum that you want these days for a good mix. Like in CNC3, they added they had the GDI. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, CNC3, they had the GDI and the Nod, and there was like a third.
It was a Skryn.
the Skryn, the alien faction. Yeah. I wonder why they went back to two after experimenting with three, because it seemed like three worked pretty well for them.
Yeah, I think so. I think I can't remember. Hey, Dan, were the Skryn retcon completely, or? They just looked down upon.
I think maybe people just liked the, the GDI versus Nod was always the classic dynamic, and maybe the Skryn were, as interesting though they were kind of, you know, because they had a very different approach, were maybe seen as, like, mythologically kind of seen as a bit of a party crasher, so they just kind of went back to basics.
So the one thing we did want to remind you guys about regarding the DRM for CNC4 is you will need a constant online connection. Not in the same way, I guess. I haven't tested myself. I'm not sure if it's completely along the same lines as Ubisoft's DRM, where it, you know, sort of cuts you out of the game and you can potentially lose your save. But I mean, in order to play online, you have to log into the EA online servers, and likewise with single player, I'm told. So heads up on that.
So what happens, because I'm interested about this, I think Logan was talking about this the other day where he said he was playing Assassin's Creed 2, which also requires this consistent or persistent connection. And he had like a little router hiccup, you know, like his internet connection stuttered for like a second, and he got kicked out of the game. That seems really bad, if that's the case.
Yeah, it's very annoying. And actually, like, the more problematic or frustrating thing was allegedly the Ubisoft, I guess, like the verification servers, whatever servers they use to verify that people are online. already registered the game, I think, were hacked or sort of DDoS'd during the initial launch, and they were down for a period of time. So nobody could even start the game because the servers were down. People that had, you know, bought the game and paid for it and were ready to play couldn't even jump in because the servers were deactivated or disabled somehow. Pretty crazy.
It's always really annoying. It seems like in this never-ending escalating war between the pirates and the software companies, that the only real casualties are the people that want to play the games legitimately, you know, the honest customers. They're the ones that have to put up with all this additional hassle, and things break, and it's more and more of an inconvenience, whereas the pirates will always just find a way around it. You know, they don't give a shit. And it's just a shame, really. It kind of reminds me of when you rent a movie or when you buy a movie and you have to sit through 5 minutes of lecturing introduction video going, you wouldn't steal a car, why would you steal a film? Well, I didn't steal it, I bloody bought it. But they assume now that everyone is a thief. It's a shame.
It's definitely strange, just the gap in understanding between consumers and pirates and producers themselves. Yeah, I'm sure you've gained a new perspective on that with your film, which has unfortunately probably been pirated and out there to people.
Oh yeah, it certainly has, and it's annoying to me. But you know, there's nothing you can do about it. It's a sad reality until the day comes, and I don't think it ever will come. That they come up with absolutely completely flawless copy protection. You know, it's just a sad reality of creating content. You know that people are gonna steal it.
All right. So the one bit of news we did want to share with you guys, and Josh reminded me about this. I wasn't even aware of this. Up until a few minutes ago, that Star Trek Online, which released in February last month, is going to be adding another playable race. We're not sure exactly when, probably this year.
Yeah, they said for sure at least one this year, but the way they talk about it, it sounds like they want to add, you know, 3-4 more over the course of the life at least. Right now, they're really excited. They're debating between Romulan and Borg. Right now, and Borg is a really odd choice. You know, they kind of talked about, oh, there's a lot of really interesting things you could do with a Borg faction. And it's totally true. I mean, if they want to be ambitious and try and come up with a whole new style of gameplay within the game, I mean, Borg is a great choice, but it'd be a real disservice to toss the Borg in as just a kind of a skin over another faction. The other options they kind of mentioned were the Cardassians and the Jem'Hadar. I'm not a huge Trek nerd, so I can't say. I'm not even sure who the Jem'Hadar are, to be honest.
They're part of the Dominion, which includes Cardassians and the,
okay.
It doesn't include Cardassians?
No, Dominion.
It did it one time. Okay, Dan. Do you want to hop on the podcast, Dan?
You can correct
our fictional discrepancies.
Either way, you know, I'm really hoping that they take the time to fix the issues that Star Trek has now before they jump in and start adding these new factions, because Klingons are still
incredibly
lacking.
Content light. Like, yeah,
yes.
Like that's kind of my first response. Like, so I tried playing as a Klingon, and you basically had like 4 missions for me or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it seems to indicate that they're going to put a lot more emphasis on PvP, which is cool, which I'm excited about. You know, more ship types, more different mechanics in the ship weaponry and whatnot. But
yeah, if you're going to add a faction, it needs to be PvE and PvP. I mean, so if they're thinking about adding Borg as like PvP only, I mean, there's just no fun in that. I mean, I am a huge PvP buff, and even then, like, I wouldn't want to only PvP. You need to have the diversity kind of hop between depending on how you're feeling, or, you know, if you want to play with your friend who is PvE and you're PvP, I mean, you need to have a common ground where you guys can meet up. They are adding a difficulty slider and a death penalty, which is, I think is a good move, because, like,
EXP penalty for death? Or
they haven't said exactly what it is, just that they're adding a penalty.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it's very hard to die at all right now, so the difficulty slider will, you know, if you're more of an MMO expert and you're feeling confident, boost that slider up and, you know, don't be afraid to die. And then if you actually do die, there's some sort of penalty rather than, I think it's like an 8-second timeout or something right about now.
Is that a totally new idea, a difficulty slider in an MMO?
As far as I know, I don't know any that's done that. And the thing with Star Trek, the reason it will work is because a lot of it is instanced. So it can change the instance just for you and slide it. Otherwise, I mean, I guess it could be something along the lines of, like, basically it just reduces your chance to dodge and hit by a certain amount as you go up and down. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it's actually implemented. But depending on how it's implemented, yeah, it could be a brand new idea, which would be great.
Yeah, curious to see how that works out.
Especially, I guess they would have to give better rewards too if maybe you bump up the difficulty, which would be interesting. Whereas maybe, you know, if you bump it up, maybe, you know, there's a higher chance for them to drop, you know, better gear.
Okay.
Whereas if, you know, you just want to get through the story and you don't really care about gear as much, which I don't know why you're playing an MMO if you don't care about gear, but, you know, maybe toss it down to easy and just crank through it.
I want to have you guys attack for us this week. Another one of my favorite fun hypothetical ridiculous impossible things to talk about is if you had to make a game, what type of game would you make? And I think sometimes, you know, in this job writing about all these games and playing everything and being in that industry, we tend to think that we'd be good at that, maybe. We tend to speculate or imagine that it's an easy process and we have this absolutely good idea that couldn't fail and it's full of creativity and would sell, and we know what the consumer wants because we are consumers, but we understand the industry, but, you know, maybe not. We'll see. So, Josh, I'm going to throw it at you first.
Oh, all right. Well, see, this isn't necessarily the game that I would want to make most, but it's the game that I can't believe hasn't been made.
That's just as well, yeah. Even better.
Some sort of remake of X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, and you have to believe it's in the works because LucasArts is digging up this old IP. But, I mean, just a space combat sim like that is just so good. And I've really wanted to break out my joystick and use it, but I haven't had a reason in at least 5 years to bust out a joystick and start going. But TIE Fighter was one of my favorite games. And, of course, you need PvP, because PvP makes everything better. So X-Wing versus.
Yeah, you actually have the original box up there next to you.
Yeah.
If I'm correct.
Oh, yes.
So I'm curious, in terms of a business model, Josh, because, you know, that's totally up your alley and your field. Do you think it would be a browser-based version with refresh graphics? Would that work? Should it be like a $15 downloadable? Should it be a full retail release with co-op?
If it's a remake, I would go with like a $15 downloadable. But I mean, honestly, I would just want to start from scratch. Because I mean, I fantasize about the missions, and I probably make them remember them a lot better than they actually were at the time. I mean, you could probably make a much better game with that same premise. And I say go big or go home. You've waited, what, I don't know, when did that come out? Like, it's almost 10 years or something close to that. Over 10 years, I mean, do it right. I would just go big budget. Could probably hit a $30 price point, I think. And downloadable. Yeah. 3D. No browser.
That's fine. Yeah, I think we might get some kind of answer on that when the Old Republic decides whether or not it's going to have any kind of space combat or space travel. Because you got to think that's one of their most popular licenses of all time, or usages of the Star Wars license. So
yeah, it's really interesting. I wonder if they were even thinking about doing this, maybe they decided to hold off in hopes of, you know, just bringing people into the MMO for that aspect of it.
Yeah, my game that would be fun for me, and also I'm just awestruck that hasn't been made, or maybe it has been made and I can't think of it. I guess there was a adventure, I think it was an adventure game called Police Quest by Sierra back in the day. I didn't play it. It wasn't super popular.
Oh, yeah.
I think. But I love Space Quest and I love King's Quest. Just a police procedural, straightforward. It's something people understand. It has mass market appeal through, you know, things like CSI and Law and Order. And all those types of
Telltale made a CSI game, didn't they?
I'm definitely thinking in terms of like an action police procedure, like with cutscenes. Maybe it's open world. I mean, certainly, if you want to think of it in a binary way, it's just like the flip side of what GTA is. You're playing it as a cop and you're responding to situations, and you have storylines. You have bad cops that you have to deal with, and maybe you're choosing sides in between. You're, you know, taking a little off the side. There's government conspiracies or something. I don't know. But it's just shocking to me. Nobody's really attacked that role of a police officer. I mean, there's so many cool game mechanics that could result from it in terms of patrolling and, you know, drug busts and things like that, and equipment, and you could level up and become a sergeant or something. I don't know. But
so would you say this is an MMO or like a single player RPG type thing?
I think it's got to be. I'd want it to be single player mostly. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a real. Obviously, there's all these TV shows. There's drama inherent to that that role in that story that they could really take advantage of. I guess, you know, maybe you could say APB, which is MMO, doesn't have a police faction explicitly. I think the police in that game are almost more mercenary. Like, they're They're sort of hired guns as much as the other guys, I think. I haven't played it, so I'm not totally confident in that, but I'm just really shocked nobody's attacked that role. It's familiar, it's interesting. And so before I kick it over to Andy or Eric, I think the other game, I'm kind of a sucker for grid-based tactical games, and at least, I mean, sort of like XCOM is what I'm referring to. It's strange, I say this not having played a ton of XCOM, but I played a ton of Final Fantasy Tactics on PlayStation, and another Square Enix game called Front Mission, which is terrific. And I would love to see just any kind of Facebook iteration of that. It sounds crazy that I'm suggesting that, because
yeah,
Facebook is where strange things happen. But it's just the perfect, I see you guys playing like Words with Friends on your iPhone. I would just love the idea of a turn-based tactical mech game where I have a team of mechs that I develop over time, and I'm playing against people kind of on a chessboard, and they have... there's loot that I can equip over time and things like that. I can do microtransactions, whatever. I just miss mechs in general. You guys probably get that idea from me bringing it up so much.
Yeah. So just for the record, if they do develop this game on the Facebook, you're never allowed to complain about getting spammed for messages to join it.
Evan wants a mech battle. Evan unlock arm.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. And actually, that's funny. Now that you bring that up, why the hell hasn't EA brought The Sims to Facebook?
That is a very, very, very good question.
I mean, isn't that like the perfect like peanut butter chocolate combination?
Yeah. I mean, it seems ideal. I mean, because you could even you don't even have to use avatars if you don't want to. You can just, hey, let's all live in a neighborhood, and you all set up and you interact with each other. It must just be time. They won't probably want to do it right.
Yeah.
Because Sims Online was kind of a big mess. So they're probably looking at that and going, okay, let's not rush this out. Let's make sure we get it right. Hopefully that means there's going to be a lot more than just kind of like a simple, you know, hey, we're friends now and we live next door. But, you know, if they actually did a decent graphics in game, I mean, it could be really good.
Yeah, I got to think it's a no-brainer that they have to have thought of. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they're working on Sim Ant for Facebook. The great return yes. of Sim Ant, one of Max's best games, I think. Eric, what you got in your mind? What you got to pitch?
There's two things on my mind. And, well, pop quiz here. Do either of you know my favorite game of all time?
Is it Free Space 2?
It is Free Space 2. Great. And so there is nothing that I would love more in this world than a continuation of that universe and that gameplay style where it's squad-based, flying in space and shooting each other and loading out your complete squad with missiles and guns and figuring out what you need for missions. It's just fantastic. And the story was great. There was aliens, alliances breaking. I don't know. It was a blast. And so I would love nothing more than a, you know, like crisis engine, shiny, space combat game. I would have so much fun with that.
You love your joysticks, and I think I don't think the original developer was Volition. Am I remembering that correct? But they went on to form Volition, or it was Volition?
No, Volition. It was Volition from the beginning. They went on to do Faction and Saints Row. They're still around. You know, they're still doing that stuff. They got absorbed, but. Apparently, they're just... Maybe that's not a moneymaker? I don't know. It's kind of sad.
I've got to think it's probably... I mean, Volition, again, is owned by THQ. And while THQ is not averse to new IP, you know, we've seen, like, Homefront from them. Well, we're going to see it from them. I've got to think it's for that reason, that there's some belief that the genre itself isn't a moneymaker. It can't be advertised well or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. And my second one, on a much more casual front, something me and my brother played for hours and hours and hours was Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yes.
And I would love to see, because Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 and 2 were great. And then Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, there was just something, they tried to make it a little, some aspects were like really simmy and required a lot of management. And some aspects, there was like, no control over it all. I don't know. It just wasn't what I was looking for. So I would love to see just like a super large theme park simulation extravaganza.
So, would you want that in like 3D where you can jump on the rides and ride your own rides and stuff?
See, that's, I don't really care about riding my own rides and stuff. I'd rather, if that somehow, like, if they could take that dev time and put it into more different kinds of rides and coasters and water parks and all sorts of cool stuff, I don't mind a nice looking isometric view in the strategy type of game, you know?
Yeah, I love isometric stuff. I even get picky these days when something's isometric and I can rotate the camera. Like it's, I want it just a static view, honestly, is fine with me.
Yeah, I would love that. I just have trouble seeing someone making a roller coaster game now without going for all that flashy 3D stuff, and that just doesn't appeal to me, and it sounds like pretty much no one here. I mean, you need the isometric of, you know, kids throwing up cotton candy on your sidewalk. No one wants to see that close-up in 3D.
No. Don't want to get my hands dirty.
I'm also going to throw out there a web browser-based game, free-to-play, that will guarantee to make you money with product placement.
Okay.
The Price is Right. I would love to play that game. Like, you're with, like, eight people, and you, like, have to type in the number real fast. And then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Tide detergent. And, oh, I mean, and then, wow. Oh, I need some sort of peripheral where you can spin the big wheel.
A US Showcase Showdown. And
I don't know. The Price is Right is, like, a special event, though, when you're sick and you had to stay home. So it's like, it doesn't have the same, it doesn't have the same feeling unless you're, you know, ill.
What if you can only play at 10 a.m. in the morning?
Exactly. You have to do it where you're like skipping something. So.
Wow. That's hilarious, Andy. I mean, you got to think that's how like 75% of people our age have experienced that show, like Snow Days and that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's terrific. All right. So speaking of your wonderful imagination, Andy, what game ideas lie inside?
All the game ideas I've ever had is, like, growing up have been just really mundane ways of like doing stuff. Like I had an idea of a game where all you do is like go on a road trip, but it's like super realistic. It's almost like Flight Sim, but the road. I don't know why.
Okay,
I had no idea why I thought that would be the greatest game ever, but I was like, it's going to have a super realistic like cockpit of the car.
have you ever heard of Desert Bus, Andy?
I have, yes.
It's a super realistic road trip from Phoenix, Arizona to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Is it really?
Well, it was made back in the 16-bit era, but yes, you drive on a road. It takes about 8 hours to get there, and then you get a point for getting there, and then you turn around and go back. And if you run off the side of the road, you have to wait for a tow truck to get to you and drag you back in real time.
That's amazing.
Well, the game was actually made as a joke almost, right? I mean, it wasn't made seriously. Well, it was made to sort of make a point.
It was part of Penn and Teller's game collections, and I guess
wasn't actually publicly released either, right?
I guess that's true.
It was only review copies that remain and have been sort of torrented out there.
But yeah, I guess they were making, because people, the media was going crazy, like, oh, games are just full of violence. Why can't we have realistic games, you know, realistic situations.
Oh, yeah.
So they made a bus driving simulator. Yep.
That's funny. I mean, I don't know why I always thought that would work, but lately I've been thinking about how cool of a feeling it is. And, I don't know if you guys can relate maybe, but like when you are playing a game, and this almost has to do with like the mindset I was in watching the Olympics. So I've been playing Trials HD. And I've been getting my times down like so perfectly on certain maps, and I'm still like super far away from the top of the leaderboards, but I'm feeling really accomplished, where you learn like a map so well and you have to like perfect it like to the T, where it almost becomes its own game. Like the game comes like another level up, where you're like you have to go off every hit and transition to where it's perfect. Like it's almost a weird sensation. It's almost like being an athlete.
It's like deconstruction, right?
Yeah, because in one sense, the level is built just so you can traverse it. Oh, that was fun. You crash. Oh, ha, ha, like this game is great. And then all of a sudden, it becomes this whole another level where you're like, okay, I have to like lean back perfectly on this transition, make sure my weight is forward on this transition. Then I have to exactly perfect my like positioning as I go over this jump, so I don't get too much air and go underneath the glass that's on this, so I can like not slow down at all to get this. And it becomes almost like a race course where you know every section of it. And I was like really fascinated by that. Like, I wonder how much of this is planned out. So you know, in ahead of time, where it's not just sort of arbitrarily placed sections and features, and how much of it is actually like very, very much there on purpose. So when you're doing the like time trial, you know, you really, they're like expecting you to come up with ways to like game that little feature or something. So
sure.
I was thinking, I really like the idea of being an athlete like that in a game. And it's, it reminded me of like the ski racers who are like 0.003 behind each other, you know, in the Olympics. And I was like, man, how do they, like, what are they correcting to get that extra edge on each turn? And so I think the ultimate game would be like a wave race trials hybrid, where it's like a water, cause I loved wave race way too much for the for a normal person. And I think that if they made like a side scrolling wave race with a bunch of features that you had to like traverse over, it would be so cool.
It's like an Excite Bike wave race or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
With some road rash in there.
With some some whip chaining.
Yeah, I need some guns, I guess, too, because I can't not have guns.
Come on.
So I have to ask Andy, because whenever I think of the Winter Olympics, I think of Cool Runnings. And in Cool Runnings, like, they're going through the flashcards for each turn, well, like, okay, turn seven, turn right. Did you, like, write it down for the map where you're like, okay, on this bump, I need to get my right foot forward or whatever?
Well, the maps and trials that I've been going through to get the platinum medals aren't that long. So I haven't had to, like, write anything down. But I certainly do, like, know exactly what's coming. I'm like... And you know you get in that mode where you're not even near the end of the level, but like you know you screwed up, so you just restart. No, that wasn't good. Like restart.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Preemptive quitting.
Yes.
So if anybody listening has a game idea of their own they like to share, you know, confidentially of course, you won't sell it to anybody. Feel free to share it with us in the comments or send us a question for the following week, and you can do that by phoning us at 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, or you can email us an MP3 to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Josh, you have a smile on your face. What are you trying to say?
I was just going to also add on there, please do not call us all individually at our desk to tell us your great idea.
Oh, wow. I totally neglected that. Maybe that was the subconscious inspiration for the podcast.
I think it was.
There was a very kind Southern gentleman that called us all individually on our phones, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
To ask if we knew, if we could help him get his game made. It was actually kind of sweet and sad.
Yeah, because we really can't help with that sort of thing.
Like, we just had to remind him, like, dude, we're a publishing company. We don't make games. Sorry. Anyway, so let's transition into questions. Some excellent ones in there this week.
Hey PC Gamer, this is Paul from Walpole, Mass. For a little town trivia, Walpole is in Ripley's Believe It or Not for the simple fact that you cannot go on a public road without going over, under, or across railroad tracks. But times change and it's not like that anymore. Now on to my question, or technically two. I'm not very old, so I couldn't have experienced these when they came out, but text-based adventure games. Did you guys like them? And if so, do you guys have any good recommendations? I still find it pretty ironic that I can't get Zork to run on my Windows 7 64-bit OS. Well, thank you for answering the questions, and thanks for the entertainment.
Is my answer.
Yeah.
With a tiny bit of yes.
I was terrified of text when someone told me they existed. I was like, text adventures? That's the devil.
See, I'm actually on the other side of this, because here's a little dirty secret of mine. Occasionally, when I was bored in class and I'd have a laptop, you could pull up a text adventure, and it kind of looks like you're still typing stuff.
Wow. Yeah. But you have to spend all that time trying to guess the exact phrase, like, oh, I call it an apple, but he's calling it, you know, an apple pie. Or, well, that was a terrible example. No, but you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, you can't say, like, give it to him. You have to offer it to him. And it's just like, oh, there's so little annoyances like that, that the whole time was just frustrating to me.
Yeah. Generally, you can type help, and they give you, like, the list of things you can type, which is nice. But usually it's pretty sensible, especially, I mean, maybe not like in Zork, where it's just like, go right, you get eaten by a Gru. All right. Yes. But people are still making text adventures, actually, and they're much more generous. You can use either like give or bequeath or whatever verb you want. So
the only reason you should play a text adventure right now is if you're in calculus class, because you can put it on your graphing calculator and play it there. Because that's even less conspicuous than a laptop.
Yeah. I think I'm just now trying to remember that what MUD I used to play. That was a multi-user dungeon, kind of some of the first MMOs, arguably, that were kind of a combination of text adventures and MMOs. I think they mostly had like set situations that you walk through, but you could still interact with other users somehow.
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time remembering it, but I played a bunch of those on my grandma's computer back in like 90 something. I don't know. I think the closest to something that resembles a text adventure that I played recently is Kingdom of Loathing. Excuse me. And that's just because it's so well written and hilarious. It's a browser based game. I think it's kingdomofloathing.com, and it kind of apes existing RPGs and things like that with stick figures. And there's the crafting mechanic is all alcohol and things like that. So
yeah, we actually covered that in our browser based games a while ago because like. Oh, just the class types. Like, one of them is the Seal Clubber. The Seal Clubber hails from the Frigid Northlands because one character class always hails from the Frigid Northlands. And then the Accordion Thief. I mean, it's just, it's so good. It's so tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's definitely something good to play at work or, well, if you can get away with that type of thing. Next question.
This is Peter from Connecticut. Just have questions. The first one is, why are all first-person shooters have people with right eye dominance? I'm left eye dominant, and it's a little bit jarring, and it takes me out of the experience. And second is, what are you guys' thoughts about Crysis 2 and the new environment? I know you probably discussed this before, but I probably didn't. So thank you, and thanks for the great talk.
Good questions. I guess I would wager to say that because most people are right-handed. I guess he's saying like right eye dominance. I'm not even sure what that means.
You've never been to Boy Scout camp before.
Whoops.
Yeah.
They make you do this thing when you go to the shooting range, and you put your hands in and make like a diamond between your two hands.
Thumbs, okay.
And then you slowly like bring your hand close to your face, and like whatever eye you end up at is your dominant eye.
Okay, I'm doing this at home right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mine's on my nose.
No, keep going. Like you'll go to your dominant eye. Like
keep going.
Yeah,
your nose dominance. Your sense of smell is actually more powerful than your
maybe that's what that means. Vision. Yeah,
yeah.
But I don't know what to say to his question other than that.
Anyhow, well, yeah,
factor into a game?
Yeah, I thought it was always in the middle.
Isn't it just one image basically?
Yeah.
Well, but your character holds it on the right side of your screen generally, and that would. Kind of, you would hold your gun on that side if you were right eye dominant.
I mean, there's a couple games that let you swap it, but I mean, for the most part, I think it's just a statistics where it's just there's just not a whole lot of demand for that, so they don't spend development time on it.
Yeah, I mean, they have to make a model and they have to make animations, and unless their engine supports that kind of easy mirroring where they can hit a button that flips the animation 180 degrees to make it look like you're left-handed, then. I guess they don't want to invest time into that. But about Crysis, we know it's going to be set in Manhattan. At least some of the game will be. And that's certainly a far cry from the jungle, of course.
I see what you did there.
That was good.
Thanks. Thank you. Swish. I don't know. I mean, you definitely start thinking about games like Prototype and what was the other one on PS3?
Infamous,
yes, thank you. I mean, you definitely start dreaming up these ideas of being in the power suit and just running up sides of buildings and jumping off, 40 stories and falling and free falling and, cratering the ground and things like that. Do you think that's the kind of direction we'll see the gameplay mechanics take?
I don't think that extreme. I mean, in Crysis 1, if you fell, even with your defense mode active, if you fell a good ways, you'd still take considerable amounts of damage. But I think, what I'm most excited for is it's not just a flat plane with bumps in it, which are like hills or mountains or whatever. There's multiple stories now. And so it adds a whole level of verticality that's really fun in shooters to me. You'll have to not just be searching a plane for enemies, but multiple planes up and down. And there could be snipers on top of buildings and people hiding in the subway system. I think it's going to add a lot of variety to gameplay that some people who are critics of the original Crysis might like a lot.
Yeah, and there's obviously a ton of visual precedents for aliens in cities and what aliens can do in cities to buildings and that kind of fun that I'm hoping is taken advantage of in all kinds of cool ways. And I guess you can have two active powers, right, in Crysis 2. Am I remembering that correctly? Like you can have the super strength and the super speed active at the same time.
I don't think that's actually been confirmed, but like there's solid hints about it that most people are speculating. Yeah, that's true.
Good to know. Next question.
As a quick note, the main character in Doom is left-handed.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's the only major PC character that's left-handed, but yeah, that's a pretty big franchise, so.
Hi, it's Mark from Malibu. Just wondering regarding Steam sales. If you buy a bundle through Steam and you already own some of the games that are in the bundle pack, do you get an extra licensed copy of that so that you could maybe give to a friend or maybe create an alternate account that eventually you'll set up for a friend? Just wondering because there have been many a time where I have held back buying a Steam bundle sale because I own about half the games that are in there or so. So just wondering on that. And if not, would they implement that? Or would they do something like Apple iTunes does, something like complete your My Album feature where you have two or three of the games and then you pay a discounted price for it? Okay, thanks. And love you guys. Keep up the good work. And I buy the magazine because of your podcast. Thank you.
Hooray, another ears to eyes subscriber. Terrific. So yes, in fact, as you imagined and suggested, Valve seems to have followed your advice. If you do purchase a bundle, and that bundle includes a game or games that you already have in your Steam's list that you own the license for, you will gain an additional license for. And you will. There's a column that'll say, what does it say exactly, Eric? It's like
gifts.
It's yes. Gifts. Okay. So you'll have a reminder after you've completed that purchase that you have an extra license for this, and that you can actually share this with another Steam friend. You can just sort of forward it to their account. Or I've seen some people in forums and stuff saying, "Hey, I've got an extra, you know, Warhammer Dawn of War key or license. Can I sell it to somebody?" And you know, that's all well and fine, I guess.
Okay. Scariest game: System Shock 2, Fear, Dead Space, or the Stalker series. I know they're all pretty different in their scares, but what do you guys think?
I have kind of a funny story about Fear. Like, the first time I downloaded the demo, and I was playing it at night, and my roommate was in the room with me, so all the lights were off. And I'm not a big scary game kind of person. I just can't do it very well. And, like, it's probably like 10 seconds in. Like, first it took me like 20 minutes just to creep down the alleyway because I was waiting for it to pop out every step of the way. But the one point where you, like, approach a ladder, then you turn around and start going down the ladder, and you see her like flash in front of you for a second. I shot back from my desk, I slammed the escape key, and I killed the game, and I uninstalled it, and I never played any of the Fear games since.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it freaked me out.
Wow, that's a significant response. I'd probably say personally, I mean, Fear is satisfying to me and how it scares you. I'm not sure if that makes it the scariest game or not, like the most physically repelling me from my keyboard game or not. I think it's well designed. I'm talking about the original, of course, not necessarily the sequel. And Condemned from Monolith was another pretty scary game that I didn't finish. What, I don't know what else. I mean,
did you think Dead Space was scary?
I didn't play Dead Space. I don't know. Logan says terrifying, this, and he's kind of our scary games expert.
Having played through Dead Space a few times, it's scary. It's probably not like, it's not terrifying. It's more like stuff jumps out at you scary. So it's fun
like
in that way.
Monster closets.
Like Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want the like most crap your pants inducing game I have ever played is called Penumbra. It's almost like half adventure, but it takes place in first person, and you have no weapons. It's really odd. So you have to try to like figure out how to get out or whatever. And everything is controlled like one to one with your mouse. So it's not like if you want to go into the next room, you just click on a door and that's easy. You have to click, hold down your button and drag open that door, which somehow makes everything like 50 times scarier. It's
I mean, you can't proceed and like run over the door and just think you can sort of jump behind it, right? As a defensive mechanism, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you pull open the drawer slowly and then you see something that's about to jump out of the drawer at you and you're like trying to slam it shut with your mouse, and it just makes for some incredible visceral, like, Logan's making chicken sounds at me, but it just puts you in the game so much more. And honestly, that's probably the scariest thing I've ever experienced. Penumbra.
So now that we've shared our deepest wussy secrets, I want to know what you guys are playing this week and have been playing.
Well, I beat Mass Effect 2.
Bravo.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a bit late to the party on that one. I was really disappointed with it. Mass Effect 1 is Mass Effect 1 is at least in my top 10 of all times. It may be in the top 5. Like, I came to the office the next day and I slammed out a page and a half on everything that I don't like about Mass Effect 2. Like, every change that they made is for the worse.
Oh my god, what?
Yeah, and carrying over, like, your choices from game to game, terrible idea.
Okay, well, I'll agree that having the film grain a binary thing instead of a slider, huge oversight. Okay, that's probably the only thing, though.
Oh, like, I just felt like I was, my friends in this game, like my companions, were being held hostage by BioWare. They're like, oh yeah, we have them in this room, and if you want them to survive till game 3, you're gonna mine for 8 hours. I was like, but I don't like mining. I don't want to mine. They're like, well, I guess your buddies are gonna die.
What game did you play?
Mining game, because you have to upgrade everything, or else you're under the constant threat these people are gonna die.
You don't have to.
Yeah. I upgraded almost everything, and I still lost somebody.
It didn't take 8 hours to mine.
I spent like 4 hours mining, and I got maybe about half of the stuff. I didn't buy the most expensive stuff, because that just took way too long. But Eric was mocking me because I was hitting all the nodes on a planet, and he was like, oh no, just grab the 3 main ones and keep going. But
you were doing it really inefficiently, I'll just say that much.
Eric knows how to
thorough. No.
This is coming from the man who spent like 24 solid hours and with documenting how much time he was spending in that
minigame. But here's his dirty secret. Right. He was leaving all these small nodes on the planets that I was getting, and he's like, no, leave those. Only take the big ones.
No, I was saying this to try to help you, because if the big nodes, when it spikes the graph like off the charts, are worth 8 times as much as the smaller bumps. You don't need the smaller bumps, any normal person. You could just hit those big nodes, and you were just ignoring the big nodes.
Regardless, I don't want to mine at all, because it's a terrible, terrible minigame.
Anyway, so aside from the mining, like, I don't want to go into this too much, because it could spawn a massive debate that would be good next week. But I sort of share some of Josh's perspectives. We were talking about this a couple of days ago. Mass Effect 2 was definitely a game that was made for the people that didn't like or didn't play Mass Effect 1. In a lot of ways, the combat system, the inventory, you know, for better or worse, And I think my main criticism, I think I've mentioned this a few times, is all the characters are super compartmentalized. Like, every character and every sort of branch within the game is its own little box that you can open and close, and they don't necessarily feel connected to the other boxes.
Yeah, and as a result of that design, like, a lot of times you feel like your choices outside of that small campaign don't matter. Like, I went and I did the whole Omega campaign, and then you leave Omega and nothing you did there really matters. It's like flowing you through a story. It's like, oh, you do little small segments, little segments, then at the end, you know, maybe in Mass Effect 3 they'll tell you everything that happened because you made those choices.
Sure. So the payoff is not always, or the feedback from your choices isn't totally present to you.
Yeah
Okay.
I also like the old vehicle.
Generous.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And instead, like, they replaced it with, ammo? I mean, it's just really disappointing.
Sure.
No, see, dude, I think the first Mass Effect was like this as well, but I felt each mission was like, an episode in a TV series where you go down on the planet and you find out there's something not quite right about this colony. You dig deeper, you find out that the plant is controlling everybody with its mind spores, and then it's, you know, developing the clones or whatever. That, and that's like a one episode, or like an, or maybe a to be continued. Maybe it's two episodes. You know, if you had to break it up. But but there's, and then there's also like the season finale, which is the ending, or like the overarching thing that that culminates in this last episode that you do to finish the entire, you know, game. And I think both both of them had that similar feeling to it. And the second one had even better characters in order to go on the sort of episodes as you're doing their loyalty missions. Those episodes even felt, you know, more character driven than the first one. I don't know.
Yeah, the loyalty missions were excellent. The first game was definitely episodic. I felt the second game was more. I think it was driven from the idea that, you know, they had a list of 10 options or choices that you could make that they wanted to carry into Mass Effect 3. So they made a mission for each of those 10 choices, and they're all just very separate. Yeah. But it, it's still a fun game.
Dude.
Yeah, and then I've been playing lots of Dragon Age. Dwarf Noble, again. And it's fantastic.
Very good. Getting ready for Awakening, I imagine.
Yes.
Eric Belsas, how about yourself?
I have been running a gamut of headphones through tests, and in order to do that, I have to play a lot of Bad Company too.
Oh, yeah.
At least that's what I tell myself.
Oh, no.
So I've been playing the bejesus set of that game. I have unlocked everything the engineer can unlock, and I'm about halfway through the recon tree and halfway through the medic tree. That game has tons of problems.
What's your biggest annoyance?
My biggest annoyance is the lack of a working team balance. Because I have played so many games where, you know, maybe our team isn't as good as the other team, and so we're down by quite a bit. But that doesn't mean that half of our team should leave and join the other team, and we end up with like a 20-8 match.
Also, yeah. It's kind of broken. I've tried to switch teams, and it doesn't. It's like giving me the error that I've done it too much when I haven't.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably that, and people with their grenade launchers, because that just gets annoying.
Uh-oh, that's me.
Yeah, that's everyone.
Whoops.
But as much as I love the game, like, it has problems. I love it. I'm having so much fun with it. I finally got a working joystick here, so I can fly the helicopter now.
I don't think it has any problems. I think it's perfect. Yeah.
But they just released this Frags video.
Yeah.
The friends really against grenade spam. And I just, like, minus 12 respect points. Because,
what?
Oh, no. It's just so desperate.
No, but what it did, and it did so well, is, like, showed how much of a superior game it is to Modern Warfare 2.
Did it really?
Yeah, because it elegantly, like, it was like, that we're funny, because that, you guys haven't played the single player campaign.
I think it just shows they have a better sense of humor, maybe.
Well, yeah, and then it also shows that you can fly helicopters. Because you, yes, obviously, and then you're like, oh yeah, there's helicopters, which you,
especially
can't,
if you're CC Sabathia of the New York Yankees. Yeah.
Well, there's absolutely no vehicles, you know, in Modern Warfare 2 multiplayer, and then there's tons of them in Battlefield.
Yeah.
Yes, it does have more vehicles.
Also, yeah, the UAV is utterly ridiculous amounts of fun. I think the biggest kill streak I've gotten off that thing is 12 in a row before getting shot down. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, people just ignore you sometimes because they think they can't hit you, right?
Yeah, which, I mean, it's not hard to take down a UAV. It has, like, no health, but people just sometimes ignore you. So you're just firing rockets and machine guns from, you know, like a mile high.
It's definitely that mosquito in your house that, like, oh, should I get it? No, I don't want to chase it around my bathroom.
But then it fires a rocket at you.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much.
Hate it when mosquitoes do that.
Yeah. Definitely.
So that's been, my gameplay.
Terrific. Annie Bauman, have you also been playing Bad Company 2? Yes, you have.
Yeah, that's all I've been playing. It's so good. I was trying to explain this on OXM show, but it's like, it doesn't take much for me to be super happy about a game. It just, you know, it just has to sound and feel right as far as gun mechanics go. And I think Bad Company has brought it to a new level for me. And it seems like DICE always is able to tickle that itch. It's like, the guns just feel cool to fire. You know what I mean? It's a complicated thing to probably pull off, but it's an easy thing to, you know, experience. Like, you don't have to do anything. You just push the button and you're like, oh, this is awesome.
The tracers in that game just a visual delight.
Yeah, everything just stems from that. It's like, oh my gosh, I just love playing this game. And you could go on about how much I like the MCOM missions in multiplayer. I think that adds a lot to the teamwork.
Yeah, sort of stage-based multiplayer. You sort of get some highs and lows in there and time to reset and reconfigure your defense. And
absolutely.
It's a good pace, yeah. As for myself, I've been playing a lot of the Last Stand mode in Dawn of War 2 Chaos Rising. It's the three-player cooperative survival mode where each player plays as an individual character. I've been playing a lot as the Tyranid, which just got added in the expansion, partly because there's a paint skin on the Tyranid that is called Leviathan. So, of course, I have to play that one. But it's been really satisfying. I've been playing with Josh and Eric and a couple of my other friends. And it's really, I mean, when you think about it, it's just like a venue for grinding, right? It's you earn loot over time, you're leveling up over time, you're increasing the amount of builds that you can take into the field over time. And I mean, you're seeing the same types of enemies in the same configuration every single game, but because the games are so quick and I don't know what it is about. I think actually the lead designer of Chaos Rising wrote a column for us in the issue we're working on right now. And one of the ways that he described The Last Stand is why it's so interesting and successful is by just controlling one character instead of, you know, in an RTS, say you're controlling three units even, or just like a small army. In order just to decide that you wanted to shoot at somebody or to destroy something, you have to click on that unit and you have to click on the thing that you want to destroy, right? But in Last Stand, because you're constantly in control of this one character, you just click on what you want to destroy. And just by eliminating that one, you know, extra input, it just makes it more accessible to people. They know what's expected of them. They don't have to worry about attack move and these other sort of commands that other RTSs apply, and it's easy fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving about it. It's just like, you know, it can be like 10:30 at night, you know, and we've only got half an hour to play, and it's just like, oh, let's just hop in. You can get in and do something meaningful, get a couple new weapon unlocks, and just being in that environment where you're constantly talking with each other. Okay, you do this. Oh, can you use this ability to help me out? Okay, I'm going to kite him around here while you get Eric up or something like that. It provides or just creates really memorable moments.
Certainly. I'm sort of hesitant to think that Blizzard would be as aggressive with changing StarCraft and developing a similar mode, whether it's co-op or some type of like challenge mode or something along those lines, but that would be a really cool game changer, I think, if they went that direction to add some more content.
Yeah, I would be really surprised. They seem trying to stick as true to the original as they can. But yeah, it would be a really interesting change and very similar characters, probably. The Space Marine and the Zerg.
Well, just imagine, like, I mean, yeah, you've got a Protoss and a Terran, you know, a couple squads, say, that you have to work with, or maybe you have a set amount of points to spend on different unit types.
Yeah.
And you have to defend some bunkers or something against 10 waves, you know, that'd be a blast.
I would really enjoy that. I would pick the siege tank. Dome, 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 taking them out.
Terrific. Well, I guess that falls maybe under our games that we'd like to make or modes that we'd like to make category. All right, very good. Well, thanks for listening this week, guys. I look forward to hearing from us next Wednesday or Thursday when we record again. And have a great weekend in the meanwhile. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
By the way, EnviroBear as your playlist, amazing.
Yeah. Thanks.
Although your headset does sound like crap today.
Yeah, with S's, it like gets a little sharp.
Oh, really? It's the WoW headset, isn't it?
Oh, it
Here.
Is.
Josh,
maybe I can move, bend it or something? Is it too... Oh, whoa, hold on.
We're going to try a different mic.
You're just hot swapping microphones right here. Whoa, it's like a clip reload, basically.
Cover me.
Oh, that's better.
Really?
It's much better. Yeah.
Sounds
this one's getting tossed to the side.
Sounds bizarre. Insane.
He just swapped out the scene. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe I can't tell because he's right in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, technical issues. Why can't we have a studio and just beam Andy in here every week?
That would be nice.
You wouldn't even need me. Just have an easy button.
Can't hear you. Easy button.
But it's not a matter of whether we need you. We want you, Andy.
Nothing.
I want you too.
Is it? It just sounds like it's completely. We have no audio from you at all. It might be disconnected or